Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Those were the Hasselbeck brothers talking about the quarterback situation with the New England Patriots now that Tom Brady will be in Tampa Bay. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, we've kind of been talking the last couple of days. It looks like Jared Stidham is going to be given an opportunity to be the starting quarterback for the Patriots once the season begins. Now, that's how it looks right now. They bring in Brian Hoyer, Cody Kessler already there, and Jared Stidham. So that's currently the quarterback room right now for the New England Patriots. I did think it was interesting that both Tim Hasselbeck and Matt Hasselbeck did point out that, you know, I wouldn't pencil in and write in pen Jared Stidham as a starting quarterback of the New England Patriots just yet. There's still some options out there. Matt Hasselbeck mentioned Andy Dalton. I mean, he's under contract with the Bengals right now. You would expect that they're going to take Joe Burrow with the first overall pick in the draft. So then the question becomes, okay, if you're making a trade for Andy Dalton, how much of the salary of the contract are the Bengals willing to eat at that point? And what number are you comfortable with if you're the Patriots in order to bring in Andy Dalton? Because I do think Andy Dalton to New England would make a lot of sense if the Patriots are ultimately able to come up with a deal that they're comfortable with to get him.
Yeah, I feel better listening to the Hasselbecks there because I'm holding out hope that Cam and Belichick can unite. That's still
dynamic duo, baby.
Man, I just think that would be so fun and interesting and potentially really good too. I know, you know, he's still, and there's still uncertainty about the foot with him. And obviously this is a guy who's taken a lot of punishment, has had a lot of injuries. I understand the risk. I still think there's a big reward with Cam Newton too, though. And that's my hope that somehow that could still work out. But yeah, Andy Dalton, I mean, it's still hard for me to imagine that they're just going to roll with Stidham. I think even if you really like him, right, you don't have, I mean, that is an offense that to me requires a quarterback who can raise a level of people and someone who can, you know, do some things on their own to help it along. It's just, there's just not a lot around, you know, at the skill spots, as far as we know. I do think N'Keal Harry has a chance to be a really good player in this league, and he was hurt a lot of last year. But, you know, a guy like Stidham, what is Stidham going to do with that surrounding cast as it stands? Not that it can't change, but, that looks like a 500-ish team to me. So some of this is also Belichick's just sort of mindset on, you know, how urgent it is right now to you know, quickly reboot, and how long you plan to be around, and if you looking at it more with, I guess, with the long view.
And we had Floyd on earlier in the show, and look, Floyd has worked closely with Belichick. He knows how he thinks. He knows how he operates. And he did point out, he said, look, I mean, you're basing, if you're the Patriots, everything you're talking about Stidham off basically like two or three preseason games. Like, that's basically the experience you have with him in game action. I think he got in once last year with the Patriots in a regular season game while they were blowing somebody out and immediately threw a pick six. And I think Brady had to come back into the game at that point. So there's not a ton of sample size there if you're the Patriots, I think, to really base a decision to put Jared Stidham in at the starting quarterback position. Now, it is Bill Belichick. You do pay attention to what goes on at practice. You do pay attention, I guess, to the growth your quarterback shows on the practice field as the season plays out. But it just seems to me, evaluating, you know, where the Patriots are right now, and maybe even more specifically where Bill Belichick is in his career right now. I'm not sure how much longer he wants to do this. I'm not sure how much longer he will do this. And without knowing the answers to those questions, it's still just hard for me to believe that unless he just absolutely loves Jared Stidham, which he may, I mean, we don't know, but unless that's the case, I still would find it very hard to believe that one of these guys, whether it's Cam Newton, whether it's Andy Dalton, I'm not even going to give up on my dream yet, Joe. I'm really hoping that Famous Jameis finds his way to the New England Patriots, and we just have a quarterback swap. Have Jameis with the Patriots, Brady with the Buccaneers, and we just go from there. But I'm really hoping that happens. But I do think there's a good chance that as we continue to move along here in the offseason, the Patriots aren't done addressing the quarterback position.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question of Belichick and you know, I mean, how much longer he wants to do this. I mean, he's 67. It's not like he's, a lot of guys these days go into their 70s in coaching and
just think about Dick LeBeau, man.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. Who was here in his 80s, still a really good D coordinator. So, maybe if you're Belichick, you don't want to get into this, oh, now Brady's in Tampa Bay, now I'm going to make some sort of semi-panic move to try to, you know, to try to match him this year, you know. And it's like, okay, we've got time. Every team has to go through some level of rebuild. The Patriots have incredibly basically gone two decades and changed out other parts and stayed ahead of the curve and been at least a good team every single year and usually a Super Bowl contender every year, which is just so impossible to do in this league, but they did it. But at some point, if you're Bill Belichick, you've been through, you've been around the block. You've been with the Cleveland Browns. You've been with other franchises. You understand that at some point you do have to sort of rebuild and try to figure things out. And if he doesn't love any of those options, then, maybe you take a year and you go with Stidham and then you try to figure out a strategy. I love the Jameis. That's my number two because, of course, if we could have Jameis and the Patriots against Brady and the Bucs in Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl, I mean.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's what's sustaining me right now through the situation we're in the sports world. There's nothing going on. We're all cooped up at home as a society. We've got, we're watching things we never thought we would watch. Really, the thing keeping me going right now, I need to see Jameis Winston in New England. Like, it's got to happen for me. This is something that Bill Belichick needs to throw me a bone for the first time in his life and be like, you know what, Robbie? I've got your back. This is something that I'm going to do for you now.
See, I want Cam just because – again, I think Cam with Belichick and what he would do, with that offense and how they would work together, that just would fascinate me. But I mean, Jameis would be fun too. Like Andy Dalton just doesn't sound fun. I mean, but Andy Dalton doesn't sound fun anywhere. I feel bad because Andy Dalton's a fine quarterback and really not performing well in the playoffs. You can't argue otherwise. But really, a guy who did pretty well in Cincinnati and got some teams in the postseason. And he was a pretty good player. He just bores me. I'm sorry. I wish him the best, but that's just not – it just doesn't appeal to me. Cam with New England, very appealing. With these guys at this point, you're talking about – I guess Washington is a place, and we've talked about Jacksonville too, places that – they have young quarterbacks that the franchises probably aren't totally sure about. Minshew had a nice, a nice rookie year. He had some good moments, but he doesn't look like the long-term solution there. The question with the Jags, though, is are they just intent on just tanking it out this year? Because that may well be the unspoken or at least behind closed doors spoken strategy. So – maybe you don't want to bring in a good QB and screw that up.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly something that you got to keep in mind. The other thing that's keeping my hopes of Jameis Winston to the Patriots alive, up there in the Boston area, you've got the harbor, the ocean's right there. There's a lot of good seafood. up in the Boston area. We know how much Jameis Winston loves seafood. That's something we could have there. I mean, I really need to be a part of the recruiting pitch, I think, from the Patriots to Jameis Winston.
I'm glad that we got to a Jameis Winston crab legs joke. I mean, it was about time, you know. I mean, like you said, we're isolated. We're grasping at different shows we can watch and different things we can do to occupy the time. It was bound to happen that we were going to circle back through some crab legs talk. So hey, I like it.
Well, I mean,
there are a lot of good ones up there.
Look, there are a lot of things worse that you could steal. I mean, Jameis Winston could have gone on like a toilet paper rampage and stolen all the toilet paper like everybody's doing right now, but instead he was harmless about it and it just took the crab legs. I can live with that. That's fine.
It's not that big of a deal. Speaking of that, you know, we have not done any panic shopping at all. We've just been normal, just going to the store like normal, like just try, you know. And I know there's been some panic shopping out there. But we are coming up on some toilet paper. Like, we're going to have to go shop for toilet paper. Like, am I going to be able to buy toilet paper?
You're going to have to take, like, maybe, like, your kid's lightsaber, like your toy lightsaber from Star Wars with you. Like, I'm thinking about doing that. I've heard it could get, you know, really dangerous out there looking for the toilet paper.
I mean,
like,
so far.
I don't know why this is.
Well, the last two times I've gone to the store, I've just looked, and there's not a single – everything else is fine. There's not a single paper product on the shelves.
My message Why to the general this? Public would just be, don't be one of those people that's like buying up all the toilet paper and then trying to sell it. Like, there's a story that came out last week,
like
that
those
some
guys
dude
with the, yes, yes,
has bought like 17,000 rolls of toilet paper or something like that and was trying to sell it and then couldn't, which I was like, you know what, that's what you get.
I missed
awesome.
That one. I thought you were going to talk about the hand sanitizer guy who got totally
Maybe that was
busted.
It. That was it. I just made that up. It wasn't toilet paper. It was hand sanitizer. So okay. Thanks for correcting me, John.
Well, hey, there may be a toilet paper bandit, too, because there's none of it out there.
Yeah, it's certainly a crisis that I didn't think in a situation like this we'd have to deal with, but it's been something that we have had to deal with. You're right. Like, luckily, I still have some, but there's going to come a point where I don't, and I'm going to have to go out and find some, and hopefully there are some available to the general public at that point. When we come back, the XFL is making some moves, man. Some quarterbacks that have lit it up in the XFL, or what was the XFL for like 4 weeks, have now signed in the NFL. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And Joe, yesterday I gave the show kind of a homework assignment to work on, not only the rest of this week, really the rest of the month, and that is the TikTok. Have you done any research on the TikTok? Because I was looking at some stuff yesterday, and there's one of my favorite movies that's ever been made is the movie Gladiator. And there are some people that have done some creative stuff with that movie. And I think, you know, if this lasts much longer, pretty soon you're going to find me walking around the house with, like, no shirt on, in a toga, with a sword drawn, making some TikToks of my movie in Gladiator. I just wonder, have you put in any work on the TikTok front yet to this point, Joe?
I have not. Now, I know my daughter is going to be game when we decide to do this. So we haven't gotten there yet, and we will.
Is it going to be like a movie scene? Is it going to be a dance? Like, what do you anticipate this? Like, how do you anticipate this going for you?
Well, I think her choice will be some kind of a dance thing. So that's I'm gonna leave it in her hands. She's very creative, and she likes to dance and things like that. So I'm gonna leave it to her. Maybe the light bulb will go on, and I'll think of something that makes sense. I still don't totally. What's the time on the TikToks? 30 seconds? 15
sure.
seconds? Isn't there? There's actually a limit, though, right? Isn't there?
I have no idea. I haven't done that much research. No.
Marquise is shaking his head at me.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't
keep up with this mumbo jumbo.
Oh, you
well,
sound like
Marquise,
an old guy now.
You were given a homework assignment, and at some point, you're going to have to complete that assignment.
Well, guess what? I went to the University of Alabama, and I don't do homework, sir. We just get by.
That may
just
be
got
the
by.
Best description of the University of Alabama that I think I've ever heard.
I got by with a 4.0, though, so I got by somehow, some
way. Did you really?
Yeah.
Look
I was
at
on
you.
The dean's list my final
well, then
semester.
You did homework then.
I didn't. Well, technically it wasn't homework because it was like journalism work.
Yeah.
So technically it's not homework. It's more like journalism work. But no, I don't. TikToks, no, it's not my thing.
Yeah, well, it's not my thing either.
Was
but
like valedictorian.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I was at a 3.8 my first year of my senior, my first semester of my senior year, and then I was on the dean's list my final semester.
Nice. I may have gotten a 3.8 on a test one time.
So what? Okay, so what was your final cumulative GPA then?
It was a, I think, 3.6.
Wow, yeah. Good job, man.
3.5, 3.6. Yeah, it was pretty smart. But also, what take into account that I also went to University of Alabama for like 2 years because I was a transfer kid. Okay. So I had mostly I had mostly journalism classes to take. So it was pretty.
So it was a lot of field work.
Like, so
yeah, I mean, I remember those
as
days.
Long as you're not bad at your job, then you would be fine. But, which I wasn't. So therefore I passed.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's not. I mean, in college, you know, in the dark ages for me, long ago. You know, like you have like reporting classes. I had to cover, you know, Mason, Michigan, little town in Michigan, the Board of Education, you know, as a beat. I mean, trying to find stories on that beat, you know, that wasn't necessarily easy. So good job, Marquise. That's impressive. I think you can handle a TikTok assignment. I mean, if I'm going to do it, you got to try.
Well, I mean, I don't like doing the trends. I don't do the trends.
You,
I stay
you
away
like
from,
zagging when people are zigging.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Like,
Brunson leads his own path.
Yeah,
he
you
is
know,
in charge.
When people started dabbing and I start seeing like old people do it, and I'm just like, oh, it's not cool anymore. So that's kind of what I look like with TikTok. It's just like now that I see everybody doing it, it's just like, I'll pass.
Maybe there's a thing past TikTok. Like, what's the next thing? You know, there's always a next thing.
Yeah, there is.
Try to be innovative, Munson. Maybe you can, during this time, when you're at home napping, like, maybe you can invent something that we do up next. Like, the next big trend in the United States of America.
Like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah, it's called Not TikTok.
Well,
anything but TikTok.
The Not TikTok app, where you just go on an app and
like,
it's Not TikTok.
Like, who knew that the pride of Alabama Crimson Tide journalism was Greg McElroy and Marquise Munson? That's where we are right now.
And yeah, pretty much.
Did you go to school with
Reese
him?
Davis?
Yeah.
Reese Davis, the Bama guy?
Yeah, Reese Davis graduated from Alabama, too. Yeah. Right. There you go. Right.
What a trio that is. My goodness. Joe, we've seen some news come out yesterday. P.J. Walker signing as a quarterback with the Carolina Panthers. Jordan Te'amu signing with the Kansas City Chiefs. Both quarterbacks coming from the XFL. That's got to be good news, I think, for the XFL, who has said, by the way, that even though their first season has been cut short, they plan on coming back next year. They plan on resuming action and continuing, which we knew last year with the AAF. It was one of those things where it just kind of was here 1 minute, about 5 weeks went by, and all of a sudden it was gone. It just looks like for now the XFL has some staying power. But a couple of big moves yesterday, P.J. Walker and Jordan Te'amu signing with NFL teams. That's got to be good news and at least a good look for the XFL, especially if like your players, you know now, at least there's an example of you can play in the XFL and still find your way back into the NFL at some point.
Yeah, and P.J. Walker instantly, you know, made a splash in the XFL. Of course, he played at Temple, so it makes sense that he would reunite with Matt Rhule. With Carolina. Now, of course, Kyle Wright has moved on. Remind me where Kyle Wright just went. They traded Kyle Wright to somewhere. I'll figure that out. But he's gone. So now essentially.
Kyle Allen?
Gosh darn it. Is it Kyle Allen?
Yeah, that's what got me confused. Yeah, because I was like, Kyle Wright.
We got
another XFL guy?
We got Jack Ryan and Jack Bauer. We got Tom Clancy and Tom Wolf. We got Kyle Wright and Kyle Allen. Yes.
Yes.
Kyle Allen traded out of there. Of course, you know, he had a nice run last year. Okay, so he went to the Redskins. So now it's essentially Bridgewater, and then it's going to be P.J. Walker as a backup, and we'll see if they can.
Will Greer is also there.
Yeah.
Will Greer, okay.
Yeah,
there
he's
you go.
There. He's third string.
And then, you know, Cam's either going to be traded or released. And then Te'amu, you know, that's what this also speaks to, guys, is, you know, just how hard it is to find good quarterbacks and, you know, the starvation, you know, for good backup quarterbacks in the NFL. Still a whole bunch of those guys circulating right now, and we're trying, you know, that's one of the things down the checklist for the Titans is to figure out who their backup's going to be. But it's good to see those guys get to show themselves in that league and get a shot off that. Sometimes, you know, you just being on the field and being able to play in games, you know, it's you can't substitute for that.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I think, you know, when you look at the Kyle Allen situation, like, is interesting to me because now he's been traded to Washington and you've got Dwayne Haskins there. Like, is Kyle Allen, is he going to come in and be the starter? I mean, he wasn't great for the Panthers last year, but he played pretty well, especially when he first took over the job from Cam Newton, was playing really well. I think they were undefeated for like 3 or 4 weeks with him as the starting quarterback. I wonder, like, are the Redskins bringing him in to be the backup just so they have a good option after Dwayne Haskins, or is he going to compete for the starting job?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, you know, he'll compete. I mean, I'm sure it's a competition thing right now with Haskins, try to push him and get the most out of him. But, I mean, to me, you draft Haskins where you draft him, you've got to give him every opportunity to, you know, to show that he can be the guy. I mean, we just saw not that long ago Arizona punt on Josh Rosen after a year. So it happens, but seems to me like, I mean, I like Dwayne Haskins. I think Dwayne Haskins can be a good quarterback. It's so hard. You throw him out there with a terrible team as a rookie. And again, like, we had Floyd Reese on earlier. I mean, you know, in his day, it was like you don't even think about putting these rookies out there unless it's desperation time. And now it's like we're judging them in their first year, you know. But I think Kyle Allen certainly be competition. And if it goes the way they hope, he would be the two and Haskins would step up and claim the job.
I am excited to see that the XFL appears to be coming back next year and will resume play because – you know, it's one of those things you wonder. You're trying to get a league off the ground, and I think the popularity when it started the first week, maybe even 2 weeks, was high. The buzz wasn't quite as high after that. Of course, we had a lot of different things going on in our country and in the world in general. But I am excited to see it come back because I think there's a market there. Like, it's the spring. There's no football really going on at that point. Yeah, you've got the NBA and the NHL, and that's always going to be, I think, top dog in the NCAA tournament at that time of year. But I am excited to kind of see what a spring football league could look like over the long term. There have been a lot of different things that have tried to get off the ground, so I'm hoping the XFL can come back and try to generate some positive momentum when they do next year.
Yeah, this is another generational thing between me and you guys, but I was a massive USFL fan.
Oh, yeah.
And so grateful when it, you know, when it was devised, and as a kid who couldn't get enough football, I mean, it was fantastic. And of course they were drafting NFL caliber guys too and paying them and getting guys like Herschel Walker and Anthony Carter and Steve Young. I'll admit I didn't watch a second of the XFL. So, you know, it's your job or whatever. There's a lot of other sports going on. I'll tell you right now, I would watch some live XFL action right now.
I'd go buy a foam finger. Yeah, I would be in the history of the earth if they were still playing right now. But that's just where we are as a society. When we come back, the Predators made a big move yesterday, a big signing that could impact their future at the goaltending position. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Aaron Sims, Milwaukee Admirals play-by-play voice, talking about the signing of Connor Ingram by the Predators yesterday, a 3-year contract extension. Connor Ingram has been the goaltender in Milwaukee for the Admirals this year. Really has been splitting time with Troy Groznick and has played very, very well for the Admirals this season. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, Connor Ingram, you look at him this year, his stats, I mean, they're really, really good. He's 21-5-5 on the year, has a .933 save percentage, a .192 goals against average, was an all-star this year in the AHL. And basically, when you look at how the Predators acquired him last summer, it was basically for nothing. I mean, they traded, I think, a 2021 seventh-round pick to the Tampa Bay Lightning to bring in Connor Ingram. And that position, the goaltending position, look, we thought for the last few years – you know, it's solid for the foreseeable future. You've got Pekka Rinne and you've got UC Saros, but you look at what's happened with Rinne this year, and obviously he's 37 years old. I mean, Father Time is undefeated. It's going to catch up to him at some point. I think he's got 1 year left on his contract after this season. Maybe that's it for Pekka Rinne. After that, we don't know. If so, you got to find another guy to go along with UC Saros, and certainly seems like the Predators, with the contract that they announced yesterday, have a lot of faith that Connor Ingram could be that next guy to join UC Saros in net here in Nashville.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's gone fast, and as you pointed out, yeah, 2021 seventh round pick, a move that, you know, just sort of just one of those moves and doesn't grab much attention, but obviously he's been terrific this year. And so I guess, you know, we can now envision, you know, down the road, maybe not too far down the road, where it's Saros and Ingram as the tandem in Nashville. I mean, how realistic do you think that is in the next couple of years?
I think it's very realistic. I mean, I would still expect at this point Rinne comes back next season and he gives one more go at it, but, you know, he's going to be 38 years old at that point. I think there's a good chance, I don't know how great the chance is, but I think there's a pretty good chance that after next season comes and goes, Pekka Rinne is done and he retires at that point. And I think after that, you know, Connor Ingram, if he continues to play this well, especially as well as he's played at the American Hockey League level, he's going to force his way into the conversation at some point. And remember, I mean, goaltenders are a little bit different. Like, he's 22 years old, and typically, you know, it takes longer for goaltenders to get ready to play at the NHL level. That's just the way it is in the NHL. But I think, you know, by the time Ingram is 23, 24 years old, especially if he continues on the track he's on right now, he's going to force his way into the conversation. So I think it's a great situation to be in if you're the Predators, because quite honestly, this time last year, we were kind of looking around like, okay, you've got UC Saros, and that's really good, but who's behind him? Like, who else do you have if you're the Predators that can kind of force their way into this conversation and put some back pressure on your goaltenders? And there really wasn't anybody. Like, Troy Groznik has been good in Milwaukee, but I don't think anybody feels like he's, like, you know, in danger of pushing Saros and Rinne,
right,
and maybe one day being the backup here in Nashville. And I think Ingram, especially given his age and how well he's played, you know, he's 6'1", so that helps as well, a little bit taller than Saros. So I think there's a good chance that he's going to force his way. And look, you know, who knows what the future holds, but, you know, he was a top prospect when he was drafted. And you may look at where he got drafted in the third round by the Tampa Bay Lightning and say, well, he couldn't have been that high. He was a third-round pick. This has always been something, Joe, that's fascinating to me in the NHL, because oftentimes you'll hear people compare, like, the goaltending position to the quarterback position in terms of, like, the importance that it has. It's the most important position in the league and in hockey and in the game of hockey in general. But you look at, like, the drafts, and you hardly ever see goalies go in the first round. Like, you know, you think back to the 2019 draft last year, there wasn't a goalie taken until, like, the 36th overall pick in the second round. I mean, it doesn't happen a whole lot that you see goaltenders getting drafted in the first round. So that's kind of a weird thing. Like, you see in the NFL, quarterbacks, sometimes too many of them go in the first round, probably not worthy of going in the first round. It's
just
interesting.
Most are busts.
Yeah, and most of them are busts. It just kind of is interesting, like, the importance we place on quarterbacks, the importance we place on goaltending, and how totally different they are in terms of the drafting process in the NFL and the NHL.
That's an interesting point. So, I mean, I assume that speaks to a high bust rate for goalies, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it basically, it's like goalie is one of those things that it's hard to know at that point, and you kind of have to I mean, what round did Pekka Rinne go in? Really low.
He went in the eighth round. It doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, we don't have one anymore. So, and that was one of those, you know, where it was hard to evaluate him because of who he was playing behind. But, yeah, that is very interesting, and that's a big contrast to that position. Interesting with Ingram, too, and now I'm reading directly from Adam Vingan's story on him. He went to Milwaukee, athletic.com, theathletic.com /Nashville. There you go, Adam Vingan. Hope you're listening, buddy. But, you know, Vingan wrote, you know, it was a curious departure, and they haven't really talked about it. There was some sort of difference in opinion on his playing time. And then, you know, there's the maturity-related concerns which Vingan, you know, got into a little bit as well. I mean, there was some vetting done. You know, Carl Taylor, the Admirals coach, said, you know, you do some recon behind the scenes, and Ingram has not been any kind of problem for them. But apparently there was some sort of difference of opinion or of personality in Tampa Bay that may end up, you know, giving the Predators a heck of a return on a seventh-round pick.
Yeah, and, like, even UC Saros, like, you look right now, he was a fourth-round pick. So it's not like, you know, you find a bunch of these goaltenders that are just kind of hanging around the first round. Like, I think the Predators have had, like, two first-round picks they've spent on their goaltenders in the history of their franchise. I think Brian Finley was one and Chet Pickard was the other, and both of those were total busts. So, like, it's one of those things where it just kind of seems like if you're an NHL team and you're trying to find your goaltender of the future, there's just kind of different routes to go about it. You can make trades for, like, unless you're Marc-Andre Fleury, who I believe was, like, the first overall pick just because of how good he was. Like, you just don't see that happen very often. So, good news for the Predators. And you heard Aaron Sims in the opening talk about how, you know, a lot of people talk about the Forsberg for Erat trade and how one-sided it was and how lopsided it was. Maybe not quite the same with this Ingram deal if you're the Predators, but I certainly, like, if you trade a seventh-round pick in 2021 and Ingram ends up being a guy that you can rely on in net for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, maybe even longer than that, that's a heck of a deal if you're David Poile.
Yeah. What is, by the way, what is the, if you know this off the top of your head, like the highest drafted goalie for David Poile as Preds GM? Do you know?
I don't. My guess is it's Brian Finley, and I can't remember exactly when he was drafted. Let me see if I could find that real quick. But he's a guy that, you know, you see it around the league all the time. I mean, the Predators have been exceptional at drafting, you know, defensemen. They've really been great at developing those guys. Lately, they've taken a run on forwards in the draft. But goalie is just not something that you see. Like, he took Brian Finley sixth overall in the 1999 draft. That's got to be probably the earliest that he's drafted a goaltender. I mean, would be my guess, because it's just one of those things. It's crazy to think how that happens. I mean, he checked all the boxes coming out. He's like 6'3", 200 pounds, was really good in minor hockey and junior hockey, but it just didn't work out at the NHL level. It's funny to see how difficult it is to project how a goaltender is going to translate from one level to the next level.
And that's where it is very much like quarterback, right? Because there's so many, I mean, I know for me, so many guys I saw in college that I said, oh, no question, this is going to be a great NFL quarterback, that didn't work out. And then sometimes guys that you never would have guessed would have had success in the NFL that did. So that's, but like you said, in the NFL, it's just, teams just can't help themselves but to keep drafting high and high and trying to find that guy. And it's interesting that in the NHL, it's kind of gone the other way.
I do want to pass along that it is now official. The Summer Olympics have been postponed for a year because of the coronavirus. So they were scheduled to begin, I think, on July 24th was the opening day of the Olympics. They now have officially been postponed to 2021. So not a huge surprise there, Joe. We talked about that to start the show off, but now that has been made official.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, we didn't need, like, a couple weeks of this country dropping out, that country dropping out. The writing was on the wall. It was inevitable. So good for them. Make it official and try to plan for next year. And, you know, hopefully that will be available. You know, at this point, it's just hard to know exactly how long we're going to be in this situation, if we're going to get out of it and then have to go back into it or whatever it is. But hopefully a year from now is a safe date. And if that's the case, you know, I think Tokyo can still have, you know, a great experience. And you know, that's one good thing about a sporting event that's every 4 years. You've got a little bit of flexibility.
When we come back, we've got some Morning Drive edition NBA and NHL awards to hand out. That'll be next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Resource page brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Even though do everything else together, go to rocknashville.com to support local businesses who are supporting you. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on the Joe Rex Road from The Athletic, taking you through this Tuesday morning. And Joe, speaking of Athletic, we've got some awards to hand out here on Morning Drive from the NBA and the NHL. And I want to start real quickly with the NHL, because The Athletic came out with a list yesterday. I think they had 41 writers involved in this poll, and we're handing out NHL award winners for the Hart Trophy, the Norris Trophy, all kinds of different postseasons award for the NHL. And you look at the Norris Trophy, and we've talked all season long about Roman Josi being in that conversation. Well, he is the projected winner of the Norris Trophy by these 41 writers on The Athletic. Dominated 63% of the vote. John Carlson, who we've all agreed is kind of in the main competition with Roman Josi, receives just 24%. Joe, I don't know if I'm necessarily surprised that he won. I am blown away by the margin that Roman Josi appears to have gotten the vote by these Athletic writers that have been polled.
Yeah, no, and you know, this is one of those, I get really annoyed sometimes with voting. I think because a lot of times people just look at like the most obvious basic stat and go off that. And I think that if you are charged with voting for these awards, you've got to look deeper. I think if you look deeper, I think Josi is the right choice. But I agree with you. I would not have guessed. I would have guessed it to be very, very close. And honestly, I still might have expected Carlson to, you know, edge him out at this point. But for Josi, it's 63.4 to 24.4, basically. That's quite a statement about, you know, his chances of winning the award.
You know, sometimes it's hard to overcome that. Like at the beginning of the year, John Carlson gets off to like this unbelievable start, both offensively and defensively. I mean, the Capitals are winning games left and right. For a while, they're the best team in the league. Sometimes it's hard to overcome that in a full season. You got 82 games to play if you're trying to chase down a candidate that started off as well and as hot as John Carlson did in Washington. But Roman Josi, I thought, was closing the gap. I actually thought that the season stopping and being put on pause when it did was probably going to hurt his chances to catch John Carlson from a league-wide point of view. But I am interested, like, if we come back and the NHL doesn't resume the regular season and the season ends from a regular season point of view as is right now, I think this is a good sign, at least, if you're Roman Josi and the Predators, then maybe you can win some postseason hardware at this point and win the Norris Trophy for the first time in franchise history.
Yeah, so maybe there's a little tiny bit of upside in the awful possibility that there's no more hockey would be maybe that Josi would get that award. Also in that voting, Robbie, I'll be honest, I'm not surprised that Leon Draisaitl is the choice. I am a little surprised that Connor McDavid didn't even register, and I know he missed some time, but he was not in the top three of our voting, you know, for the Hart. A little bit surprising to me, but I think Draisaitl, you know, it's hard to argue with him and what he did, especially with when McDavid was out.
It's certainly hard to argue. I mean, he's got 110 points through 71 games. I actually would have gone in a different direction with that vote if it were up to me. I would have given the Hart Trophy this year and the position they're in the division and the injury single-handedly carried that team throughout the year. And I know, you know.
All right.
We're losing Robbie.
Let's do some NBA real quick.
All right,
I'll go ahead and do some NBA.
You got the NBA.
Absolutely, Joe. I keep up with the NBA. This is what I got. This. So for MVP, I'm gonna go Giannis. I think that's the easy no brainer topic. Now you could easily put LeBron James, and you can also put Luka Doncic in that category as well. But I think Giannis is the no brainer. I also think Ja Morant is also the no-brainer for Rookie of the Year. Now, me and you talked about this during the break, and you seemed to not disagree with me, but you were kind of on the fence a little bit.
No, I mean, look, I agree that right now Ja Morant absolutely is the choice, but I think the way the season was going, the way Zion Williamson was playing, I do think that he was making up some ground. And I think a lot of it really would have just come down to, you know, if Memphis gets or doesn't get that eighth spot. I think it's if they're in, and of course, you know, like if we somehow luckily have playoffs at some point, and this may be just based on how it is right now, they are in. I don't see how you can take it away from them. I do think the way Zion was playing, he was opening eyes. And, you know, he was the clear. I mean, that's the thing, too. You have that bias going into the season where everyone expects Zion to win it, right? Now, John Morant had a huge lead. I think the gap was closing a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, I would vote for him now. I think it's interesting that you think Giannis is an absolute no-brainer.
Best team in the league. I mean, he's been the best player in the league. This has always kind of been LeBron's thing throughout his league, his career.
He can win it every year.
Yeah. And so, I think that's kind of not his fault because he plays at a high level. And, I mean, the Lakers are a one seed in the West when they, you know, didn't even make the playoffs last year. So, obviously, you want to take some kind of consideration for LeBron James. But I just think if you watch, this Bucks team is not the same without Giannis. And that's kind of how I always look at MVPs is what would that team be without that person? And when I look at this Bucks team without Giannis and they got Chris Middleton as their number one guy to go to, it's not a good team. At least LeBron has the Anthony Davis crutch to where if LeBron's missing games, the Lakers are still pretty good because they got Anthony Davis. So that's kind of how I dictate that situation. And it's the same thing for Luka Doncic. It's Luka's really good. I mean, Porzingis is not the best two-man in the world, but, you know, they can still be competitive. The Bucks, they're just not that good to me without Giannis. I think Giannis is the glue that holds that team together. Same thing for Steph Curry when he's won back-to-back MVPs. He's the glue that kind of holds that Warriors team together, and we saw that this year. So that's why I give Giannis the no-brainer, easily MVP.
Yeah. I mean, the Steph thing, though, obviously he's had guys around him, too, you know, especially when they had Durant. But, no, that's a fair point. I mean, if you judge this by the take the guy off the team thing, then yeah, the Lakers still have a chance because Anthony Davis is there. The Bucks probably don't. I think it's just, you know, LeBron, and some of it is almost like, one, there's probably been a couple that he could have won that he didn't in the past because of, like you said, it's like every year and sometimes a guy like that just doesn't win it because it's he's the most valuable year after year. But people are looking for someone else to vote for. I almost feel like now at this stage of LeBron's career, it's like I could see some people being like, you know, he should get one here for what he's done with that team at this age, after all these years in the league, and after maybe a couple that he should have won. But I can't argue that Giannis is the best choice.
I would give it to Giannis, too, and I think what Marquise laid out there for his reasoning is why. If LeBron's taken off the Lakers, you still have Anthony Davis. I think the Bucks are very average at best without Giannis on their team. So, and trust me, I watched the Bucks play in person last year without Giannis playing in the game. They played against the Orlando Magic and got destroyed without Giannis in the game. So trust me, I know the Bucks are a very average team without Giannis. I'd give him the MVP, but I do agree. LeBron has probably been robbed of winning the MVP two or three times over the course of the last 10 years where he should have won it.
Yeah,
and maybe
and
at
LeBron
the end of the day,
has,
that does become the difference in voting.
LeBron has robbed a few people, too. D-Wade is one of the people that I think he robbed of an MVP.
Huh?
He had a team that was a four seed, a horrible Miami team. Horrible. Like Allen Iverson 76ers 99 horrible Miami Heat team. And yet D-Wade got him to a four seed in the playoffs. So that's one of those years that I think D-Wade should have won it instead of LeBron. But, you know, you're not always getting these debates of, you know, one guy. Like, I felt like Kobe, when he scored 81 points, he didn't win MVP. I think Steve Nash won that year. So it's just you're going to always have those. That second person is never a unanimous person. Like, everybody always feels like James Harden should have won one already. So that's just how it is.
I don't. But, hey, Robbie, real quick, what was your – you cut out on the heart. So your heart choice is who?
Nathan McKinnon. He would be my heart choice just from how he's carried the Avalanche all year.
Makes sense.
When we come back, David Ubben from The Athletic will join us. He covers the Vols, and we'll get into some conversation. How much will Craig Fitzgerald, the strength coach of the Vols, leaving the program, impact the Vols as they head into this next season? That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.